Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Hey, how you doing? You survived today? Black Friday. You know, when I first started hearing that, I went to the calendar that lists all the holidays. See, is this some civil rights holiday? They're talking about ink. Thanks to Johnny Wendell for sitting in for me Wednesday night. I understand that the program just went straight to hell and everybody had fun. instead of the usual misery and pain and anguish you get with the Malloy program, I got some emails from people that said, "No, man, it was fun." Well, we'll stop that. No, thanks, Johnny, for sitting in for sure. You know, over the holiday here, and I hope you had a good time. We had a real good time. We had family and friends. And a huge, you know, we had to get out the folding tables, the long ones, and sit everybody around it. We had a good time. We had an excellent time.
We had to go to the mattresses.
Had to go to the mattresses. Molly is still ricocheting around the house. Not from crappy diet, because you know, sugar, too much sugar. Everything that Molly ate was pretty good, but just from being around people, you know how that'll just psych you up. But all during the 2 days off for Thanksgiving that we had, I heard a lot of reports about, you know, giving thanks for the troops who were serving the country over and over and over again at football games. You could see signs on prayer services, on commemorations, you know, holiday. On this Thanksgiving, let's give thanks for the troops that are serving the nation. On and on and on. And enough time, I heard it enough times to make me pause and think the United States military right now is not serving the nation. It's not. The Marines and the soldiers who are involved in combat operations are not serving the people of the United States, not in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, if the will of the people of this country were to prevail, these troops would be home as quickly as it takes to load them up and bring them back. So who are they serving then? Who are they serving? That's right, they're serving these monsters that run the United States. George Bush, Dick Cheney, the neocons, the oil-crazed corporatists, the neocons, yada, yada, yada. That's who they're serving. And yet, we don't, you know, I don't, not until yesterday, did I grab myself by the back of the neck and say, wait a second, wait, this served the truth. Because I always get that ambiguous feeling, you know, okay, yeah, they're we've got people in dodging bullets and landmines and also people who are trying to kill, wound, injure, maim other people. It's horrible. But, you know, and any time I start to criticize that, I start to feel a little guilty. You know, I really do, don't you? Maybe you've transcended it, but I still, you know, I still have a hard time because, yeah, but, you know, the troops are serving this country. They're putting themselves in harm's way. And I hate that expression with a passion. I don't know who started that, in harm's way. Oh, my God. But all those cliches that we just hear, we've heard them so many times, we don't question. I mean, I don't, not consciously. Wait a minute, who are they serving? Serving the nation? No, they're not. They're not serving this nation at all. They're being used as an instrument of that ultimately corrupts this nation, that weakens this nation. and does disservice. I'm not talking about the individual soldiers. They're out there fighting for their lives. They are. Now, if they're committing atrocious acts, that's between them and what they consider to be just moral activity. And in a different time, a different place, it'd also be up to people who would judge them. But so this is not a condemnation of the soldiers. It's just it's a realization that our military on Christmas or New Year's or Thanksgiving or Halloween, whatever, you know, everybody gets real sentimental about this. Well, there's about the troops who are not here with their families, and that is that's a sad thing. But they're not here because they are defending America. They are not here with their kids and their friends and their spouses because they are defending freedom or whatever reason that soldiers, we have been told, have gone to war, just like in the Vietnam era. They were defending the United States from communism, which was nonsense. It was an utter and absolute lie, and it took the deaths of 58,000 Americans and 3 million Indochinese before the lie finally caught up with the truth, or the truth caught up with the lie, and people said, okay, let's go home. So here we are again, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq, and soon maybe Pakistan, and maybe Iran, and God knows where else this Bush administration, or the administration that follows, if there is one that follows, will send our troops. This is nonsense. This is utter asininity. It is. It's crazy. It is empire. It is capitalism using, corporatism, capitalism using the United States military for its ends, not for ours. There is no way in hell that the soldiers who are out there in harm's way are there serving the nation. They're serving, in this particular instance, George W. Bush. You know it. You know it as well as I do. But we don't use language to explain or enlighten or understand or come to terms with. We use language in corporate America, thanks to the media that we have, in order to destroy the truth, in order to make us forget. Remember, that's what television's sole purpose is, to make you forget. And the news media's sole purpose is to confuse all of us. Prairie 2 says, Mike, the Democrats are keeping the Senate in session over the holidays. A lone senator shows up every couple of days and bangs the gavel. Today's proceedings, that was with Byron Dorgan, I think, took 28 seconds. Thousands in tax dollars spent because they can't trust the teenager in chief to be left home alone. Yeah, think about that. In order to defend the Congress's right as a co-equal partner in the governance of this country, the Democrats have to make sure somebody is there to open the sessions of Congress so that Bush can't make recess appointments that stay in effect until the current Congress leaves, which in this case would be 08, November, or 09, whatever, I don't know. Because we can't trust Bush. That's right. I mentioned last week about the this year's demonstration in front of the School for Torture and Murder. Right down here at Fort Benning, Georgia, the School of the Americas. It has a different name now, but it doesn't matter. It's School of the Americas. We talked about it a little bit, and I get from the Atlanta Progressive Network, Atlanta Progressive News, I should say, three of the people arrested, I think there were about, I don't know, 15 or 20. I should know, and I don't. But three of those arrested are from Kennesaw State University, which is... Kennesaw is within the city limits, isn't it, Kathy? I think it is. If it's not, it's very close within the city limits of Atlanta. But three college students were among those arrested in the protest at the School of the Americas at Fort Benning Sunday. And you know why they were arrested? For carrying white crosses that the police said were too large. Let that sink in for a second. White crosses that the cops said were too large and therefore might, possibly, could, maybe be used as a weapon? Now, they already have a name, the White Cross 3. One is 20, Matthew Boynton, a sophomore in international affairs. Ashley DiBellardino, 18, also a freshman. Eric Pierce, who's 26, a junior in history education. Each is a member of the Kennesaw State University Green Party chapter and are also affiliated with the Georgia Peace and Justice Coalition. There were 20, 25,000 people there. And the three were arrested after several minutes of discussion with police. You can see this if you want to. It's up at YouTube. The Atlanta documentary filmmaker, her name is Judy Condor, like the bird, Judy Condor. I would imagine you can go to YouTube and search for her, Judy Condor, and see this. But there, I've got some of the dialogue off that YouTube video. Stick around, I'll share it with you. But the enormity of the idea. Now, where are the Christians? I'm not talking about Father Bourgeois and some of the Catholics who show up there every year to protest this school of murder and death and mayhem. But where are all the Protestant dominations here in the buckle of the Bible Belt? Why aren't they screaming that three people are arrested for carrying crosses that are considered too large?
We honor the notion of being able to speak freely and with political discourse.
Yeah! Speak freely!
So, three college students from right here in the Metro Atlanta, Kennesaw State University, busted at the School of the Americas demonstration last Sunday for carrying crosses that were too big. And you can watch the video. Go to YouTube.com and find Judy Condor, like the bird, C-O-N-D-O-R, and look at it. Cop stops these three and said, if you want to disrupt School of the America Watch's agreement, that's your decision. That's what you're doing. All we're asking you is to cooperate, all right? Now, I'm asking, take your over there. We're going to have to clear the way so other people can come in. I'm trying to be as nice as I can, all right? That's what the officer said. Mr. Boynton, who is 20, responded by saying, I'm trying to be as nice as I can too, sir, and I would like to place this cross in the fence as a show of solidarity. So the cop said, you can't. I'm telling you, you can't. That's the bottom line. There comes to a point when we ask you to move, and if you don't move, then we have no choice, because it's called you're obstructing an officer. You make your own decision. All you're doing is disrupting the School of the America Watch people because they agreed to those guidelines. End quote. Mr. Boynton said that School of the America Watch told him they had not agreed to any such guidelines. Boynton said, quote, I have had it clarified by several people from SOA Watch, and no, they never agreed to those stipulations. The stick law, see, it's the stick on the sign that have the police concerned. The stick law, Boynton said, is a city ordinance. But School of the America Watch had no role in those restrictions. They had not agreed to those things. And I guess in previous years, the city of Columbus, Georgia, had the protesters walk through metal detectors. And that was challenged. So, end quote. So, these three were taken to jail where they sat in a holding cell for several hours. They were processed until School of the America Watch, that's the people who organized these demonstrations, posted bond for each of them, $365 each. On Monday, four days ago, they appeared at Recorder's Court in Columbus, Georgia, to be informed that their cases had been forwarded for review to the state solicitor's office. And now the students plan to challenge the legality of the stick law on the grounds of free speech. Mr. Boynton, the 20-year-old student, said, "It's a restriction on free speech. It's obvious that protesters bringing in signs too thick or too long or bringing in small flagpoles, that's not dangerous. Those aren't being used as weapons, only to convey speech. When the city says this, what they're really saying is you can only convey your freedom of speech as far as we want it." And Boynton also disagrees with the notion that the white crosses could be used as weapons. He says, "I think it's ludicrous. I don't think they could be used as weapons. And even if there was the possibility to use them as weapons, it's a peaceful area. These are protesters who are nonviolent. There's no threat of using them as a weapon if they could be used as a weapon." And Boynton added, "Essentially, anything could be a weapon. You can strangle somebody with a flag. But a flag is not a weapon." Boynton added, "We have fulfilled somewhat of a moral obligation. It's a moral obligation to oppose unjust laws." Martin Luther King agrees. Rosa Parks agrees. And so did a lot of other historical figures agree. So astonishingly, now your cross is too big. And it's not, you know, the cross doesn't hold a sign. In the demonstrations down there that I've been to over the years, the cross usually holds a name. And the year of death, the name of somebody in a Central American or South American country who was murdered by a death squad whose leadership or members were trained at School of the Americas. That's all. And the signs are placed either against the fence, you're not allowed on the reservation, on the military Fort Benning, against the fence or stuck through one of the slots in the fence. But now it's to the point where the wrong size cross. I wonder if Jesus Christ felt the same way when he carried his cross to Golgotha. What do you think? I'll bet he did. When Simon of Cyrene jumped out of the parade that was watching and said, "I'll carry it for you a ways." I wonder if that's because Simon of Cyrene, who realized that Jesus Christ's cross was too big. What do you think?
You have the right to free speech as long as you're not dumb enough to actually try it. Know your
rights. Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Better speak to the powers that be today. Hey Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand? You can take your revenge.
25 before the hour. Yeah, I just have a hard time with that story about the three college students busted because their crosses were too big. And what is it with the police force in Columbus, Georgia? This has been going on for 20 years, and I don't think there's ever been a Catholic nun or a seminary student or a college student or a young man or a young woman or a kid or an activist who has ever taken their stick, for Christ's sake, and tried to hit a cop. The law has nothing to do, this ordinance that's on the books now in Columbus, Georgia, has not a thing to do with sticks. I'm going to hit you with my stick so that I run the risk of you killing me with your gun. Oh, yeah, that's because I am insane. It has nothing to do with any of that. What it does have to do with was applying those little pinchers around the edges. Well, okay, you can march down to Fort Benning, where we have an institution that has trained people who have murdered hundreds of thousands of people in Central and South America, but don't let your stick be too big. Because if your stick is too big, well, then you can't protest. I disagree with that idea, you know. Regarding Iraq, Ricardo Sanchez. Now, remember him? He was run out of Dodge because of his involvement or his uninvolvement, so he claimed, with Abu Ghraib. All of a sudden, he's decided he's not only a Democrat, but he's a Democrat activist. He was the top commander in Iraq for about a year and a half, shortly after the fall of Baghdad. He said this week that he supports democratic legislation that calls for most troops to come home within a year. And if you remember, a couple of weeks ago, the House passed a $50 billion bill that would pay for combat operations, but sets the goal that combat end by December 15th, 2008. And, of course, Senate Republicans blocked it from passing. The White House threatened to veto the measure, yada, yada. Well, now, Sanchez, Lieutenant General, three-star General Ricardo Sanchez, said, quote, "The improvements in security produced by the courage and blood of our troops have not been matched by a willingness on the part of Iraqi leaders to make the hard choices necessary to bring peace to their country." He says, "There is no evidence that the Iraqis will choose to do so in the near future or that we have the ability to force that result." And then he said that the bill introduced by the Democrats and passed by the Democrats in the House, he said that that bill, quote, "makes the proper preparation of our deploying troops a priority and requires the type of shift in their mission that will allow their numbers to be reduced substantially." And about 6 weeks ago, he told a group of reporters that the U.S. mission in Iraq was, quote, "a nightmare with no end in sight," end quote. He also called Bush's decision to send the extra 30,000 troops to Iraq earlier this year, quote, "a desperate attempt to make up for years of misguided policies in Iraq." So General Ricardo Sanchez, top commander in Iraq for 18 months, has seen the light. But you got to wonder, don't you, if he sees the light now? I realize this is almost 3 years after his command ended, but if he sees the light now, what prevented him from seeing the light then? Now, regarding Sanchez's comment that the reason we should bring the troops home is because the Iraqis are not going to provide the kind of leadership that is necessary to back up or bolster what he calls the improvements in security in that sad country produced by U.S. military. But that's nonsense. You see, even that is nonsense. And interestingly, a letter to the editor, I think it was today in New York Times, from Barry Posen, who is the director of the Security Studies Program at MIT. And Mr. Posen wrote, "Regarding your article that attacks in Iraq fell to the level of early last year," he said, "according to the United States military, violence is down significantly in Iraq," and lists some reasons. But two reasons are conspicuous by their absence. First, much violence was aimed by one group against neighbors from another group. And over the life of the so-called surge, at least 1 million people, many in Baghdad, have relocated to safer areas. They did not feel secure when they decided to move, and very few are going home. But because they're now separated, the motives and the means for more killing are diminished. He goes on, Barry Posen goes on, "Second, the United States military has locked up Almost 16,000 Iraqi men since the beginning of the surge, many more than it has released, reaching a total of nearly 26,000 Iraqis in prison, in U.S. military prisons. More are held by the Iraqi government, bringing the total to more than 1% of the Sunni Arab male population locked up. He says it strains credulity to believe that they are all, in fact, Al-Qaeda terrorists. And as Barry Posen points out, if they are ever released, many will take up arms. And he concludes with what you and I know, suppression and separation do reduce the opportunities for violence, but they do not bode well for future political reconciliation. Right, so even General Ricardo Sanchez, and I do not have very much respect for military officers of high rank. And I'll tell you why. They have gotten, most of them, unless they were displayed valor in combat and had to make decisions under extreme conditions, most of these guys reach their first, second, third, and sometimes fourth stars by thinking vertically. They can only think one way. They cannot think laterally. My terms. I'm just making the stuff up as I go along. To me, most multi-starred or flag rank military officers, I don't care if they have PhDs. I don't care what their expertise is, but they are single issue thinkers. They cannot think. They are not trained to think politically. They are not trained to think diplomatically. They are trained for one thing, and that is to kill people and blow stuff up. Because that is that not the basic rule of war? Whoever kills the most and blows the most things up wins. So when Ricardo Sanchez now makes these statements about, the security situation has improved because of the valor and blood and death and gore of our troops, that's nonsense. The killing has abated a bit because the groups killing each other have killed off as many as they can, and millions more have fled. What is it? There's 2 million internal refugees and 3 million who have left the country? It's not a victory for you.
Meet Stephanie Miller in Phoenix on Saturday the 27th. Details at 1480kphx.com.
Aleve D.
The D is for difference.
Aleve D.
The D is for the decongestant.
Aleve D.
The D is what devours sinus pressure and nasal congestion. The amazing all-day strength of Aleve comes with the D, the leading all-day decongestant.
Aleve D.
The Aleve stops the pain. The D stops the pressure and congestion.
Aleve D sinus.
Your sinuses will feel the D, and you'll feel the difference.
Aleve D sinus and cold.
Be clear and strong all day long.
Use as directed.
Mark Green's book, Losing Our Democracy, was the first book to expose George Bush's claim that he wants to export democracy while he's really undermining it here at home. Losing Our Democracy is called Powerful by The Nation magazine, Convincing and Alarming by Bob Reich. Phil Moyer says that it's full of exhilarating ideas and practical advice based on Mark Green's hard-won wisdom of a lifetime. It's a must-read for all of us who believe that democracy is the true patriotism. Mark Green's Losing Our Democracy in bookstores now.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, our good friend Spitfire sent me an email here, said that don't look for that YouTube video under Judy Condor, the documentary filmmaker, the one of the three, White Cross 3. Look for it under Put Down Your Cross or Go to Jail. Put Down Your Cross or Go to Jail. YouTube.com and type in Put Down Your Cross or Go to Jail. and Spitfire adds, isn't this, you know, as far as their arrest, Spitfire writes, isn't this supposed to be a protest to the government? Why in the hell do we, quote, submit to authority, end quote, when the idea is to oppose it? Do you think the flood of people who stormed the parliament in Yugoslavia to kick Slobo out on his ass had filed for a permit? No, I don't think so. So if you want to see, thanks, Spitfire, if you want to see the video, put down your cross or go to jail. I just can't get that story out of my head. Three people arrested. I mean, arrest them for something else. Arrest them for protesting the honorable policies of the United States government. Oops, well, that's still protected by the First Amendment. That's right. Well, sort of. Protest, all right, arrest them for marching outside of a First Amendment zone, now that we have that kind of restriction. But to arrest them for carrying too large a cross? Now, you know I am not religious, and I'm certainly not a Christian, but the cross did have a period of time when it represented, oh, never mind. Maybe it never did. Now, last thing on Iraq, and after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about the Scott McClellan bombshell that went like this. That was the sound you heard Wednesday, Thursday, and today. Sounds like just like a nuke. That was the bombshell of Scott McClellan. But before we get to that, you've heard before all the foreign fighters who are in Iraq. You know, the Iranians are planting bombs, and Al-Qaeda is coming from all over the place. They're coming from, oh God, I don't know, Puerto Rico, South Alabama, Canada, the UK, Norway, Afghanistan, Pakistan, probably China, maybe the Philippines. Guess what? Guess what? According to the New York Times yesterday, Saudi Arabia and Libya, both considered allies by the United States in its fight against terrorism, were the source of about 60% of the foreign fighters who came to Iraq in the past year to serve as suicide bombers or to facilitate other attacks. That's according to senior American military officials, and that data come from a large trove of documents and computers discovered in September when American forces raided a tent camp in the desert close to the Syrian border. The most significant discovery was a collection of biographical sketches that listed hometowns and other details for more than 700 fighters brought into Iraq since August 2006. Saudis accounted for the largest number of fighters listed on the records by far, 41%. Son of a purple bitch. See, here we go again. This is the Bush Family Business Association, the Saudi royals, 15 of the 19 bombers who came to this country and attacked us on 9/11/2001 were Saudis, if you believe the official story. And now we find that 61%, I'm sorry, 41% of the insurgents, the suicide bombers that are killing people, that are killing our troops, that are blowing our troops' heads off and arms off, are Saudis. And these are the Bush family business partners. Do you smell the stench, huh? Do you smell the stench? Here's some more stats. 80%. Of the detainees, prisoners in American detention centers are Sunni Arab, even though Sunni Arabs make up 20% of Iraq's population. Now, Saudi Arabia and most of the wealthy Arab states are Sunni. Can you connect the dots there? Huh? The people who with whom George Bush and his filthy, degenerate, disgusting, vermin-infested family like to do business with, the Saudi royals, the Saudi government. You don't do anything in Saudi Arabia unless the Saud family knows about it and gives you permission. So Bush's business partners, Cheney's business partners, are killing and maiming our people and the people of Iraq. Is that a big story? I watched some network news now. I didn't see that story. Did you see that story, Kat? I didn't see that story. Yes, it was in the New York Times. Bless their little pea-picking hearts. Yeah, it sure was. Almost half of the foreign fighters that Bush is always talking about in Iraq. He's always talking about, right, huh? These foreigners that have come in there. Syria's got to seal their borders. Iran's got to seal their borders. How's come he never talks about Saudi Arabia, which also borders Iraq, sealing their border? Nah, that's his business partners. Bush is a murderous son of a bitch who does business with some of the most blood-soaked regimes in the Middle East, and he loves it. He loves it. So, the next time they talk about foreign fighters, if some smart-ass right-winger gets in your face, just point that stat out to them, that according to the United States military, not according to some freaky left-wing peacenik group, according to the United States military command, 41% of the foreign fighters in Iraq are Saudis, George Bush's business partners. Yeah, welcome back. All right, the commotion started on Tuesday, 3 days ago, the release of a couple of sentences from former White House Press Secretary Secretary Scotty McClellan's soon-to-be-released book, What Happened? Well, it'll be released in April. And he revealed in a few lines that his former bosses instructed him to lie to the American people about the Valerie Plame CIA leak case. Ooh, really? Oh, my God. This is what was released by his publisher. Let me quote this. I stood at the White House briefing room podium in front of the glare of the Klieg lights for the better part of 2 weeks and publicly exonerated two of the senior most aides in the White House, Karl Rove and Scooter Libby. There was one problem. It was not true. I had unknowingly passed along false information, and five of the highest-ranking officials in the administration were involved in my doing so. Rove, Libby, the vice president, the president's chief of staff, and the president himself. Well, we've been dealing with this for 5-6 years now. You don't need the background about the Bush crime family lying about the weapons of mass destruction, lying about the African country of Niger trying to sell uranium to Saddam. Joe Wilson goes to Africa, comes back with the truth, and tells everybody nothing there. And despite that, Bush went in front of the American public in January of 2003 before our invasion, our shock and awe, our bombing, our murder spree began, and told the American people that there was yellow cake coming from Niger. There was an attempt to smuggle, when Bush knew full well there was not. Lie after lie after lie. So, you can make the case that Bush and Cheney shouldn't be impeached. They should be hauled before a war crimes tribunal. tried, found guilty, and jailed for a very long time. So, this story broke Tuesday, and we talked about it. Wednesday, I looked in the New York Times. We weren't on the air Wednesday. Let's see. Wednesday, I think Wednesday there was nothing. Yesterday, I may have these 2 days reversed. Yesterday, I think on page 7, page 9, page 12, a little maybe 8-column-inch story about it. This is astonishing. Astonishing. Criminal behavior by almost everybody in a decision-making or an influence-making position in this corrupt White House. All of them. Andrew Card, Louis Libby, Dick Cheney, George Bush, Karl Rove, on and on and on. And New York Times, the paper of record. I cite the Times because they're the paper of record. Nothing. Nothing. Remember when the New York Times, some of you do, published the Pentagon Papers story? You remember that? Which showed the lies and deception, chicanery, murderous misrepresentation of the facts that took us into the Vietnam War. So here is this. Essentially the same thing. Not a sound. Daniel Ellsberg, who was a Pentagon employee, couldn't take it anymore and released the report, the so-called Pentagon Papers. It drove Nixon crazy. They tried to have him murdered. They invaded his psychiatrist's office. It didn't matter. New York Times said, holy jumping Jesus! And they published it. But this comes out from an insider. Scott McClellan. Nothing.
Yeah, okay.
Now, as Jay Rosen writing at Huffington Post today, he's talking about the story, he's talking about McClellan, and he said, although he, McClellan, stood at the podium and managed the press briefings, he was not there to brief the press. He was there to frustrate and belittle the press. He was there to provoke journalists into discrediting themselves on television. Choosing him to be the president's spokesman was a brazen act because it contradicted at least 40 years of received wisdom on how to manage White House communications. Instead of just, and then he refers to Bush, and instead of Bush just coming out and making the claim, like a dictator would, this is the way, it's the way it is, it's the way it is, period, I'm a decider, it's the way it is, no. They sent out this poor, miserable Scott McClellan to make announcements. The briefing room, the White House press room, as Jay Rosen writes, is a stage for both protecting presidential power and making it appear more reasoned, more legitimate, more subject to an essentially democratic back and forth. But consider this. Al-Qaeda makes announcements, and like the presidents, they instantly travel around the world. But Al-Qaeda doesn't have to answer questions. That gives Osama and company an edge. You have to start with something like that in understanding Scott McClellan, because that's where Cheney started understanding Scott McClellan. And he influenced Bush in a direction Bush wanted to go anyway to conceal his own weaknesses. Cheney and company had a different view of presidential power. They equated it not with outsized political presence the president gains with his command of the cameras and the public stage. Oh, no. But with the absence of constraint. That's the way it was described by former insider Jack Goldsmith in his book, The Terror Presidency. Absence of constraint. Think about that. Huh? No checks and balances, nothing. That's dictatorship. That's Nazism. That's fascism. One of the constraints, Jay Rosen writes, that Cheney and Bush wanted to obliterate was the interlocutor, the whole ideal, or the whole idea that the executive branch ought to be questioned by Congress, by the press, by allies, by members of his own cabinet, by the American people, was something they dared to question. They had a different idea, a really radical one, which Goldsmith grasped only after David Addington, Cheney's chief of staff, explained to him this way. This is what Addington said, Cheney's chief of staff, quote, "We're going to push and push and push until some larger force makes us stop," end quote. under that theory, when the president takes office, that is all the legitimacy he'll ever need. His power is rightly over all everyone else's, unless the White House makes a mistake and grants legitimacy to those who would check and question him or seek elucidation. We're going to push and push and push until some larger force makes a stop. Now, McClellan's specialty then was not lying. Lying, we understand. McClellan was often described as robotic because he would mindlessly repeat, remember that, some empty formula he had concocted in anticipation of reporters' questions. The point was not to underline how pointless it was to even ask the questions of the Bush White House. That was the point. Don't ask us. This is the kind of garbage you're going to get. And reporters got the point. And the insider scoop says many times they wondered what they were even doing there. I started referring to them as the crack White House press corps. It was a joke. What were they doing there? Jay Rosen says, I'll tell you. They were a constraint, being made more absent with every exchange they had with the thick-headed and graceless McClellan. In this sense, they were part of the terror presidency. The press was. The agenda was not to get the White House message out. It was not to explain the president's policies. At both of these tasks, McClellan was simply awful. His performance a non-starter. No, he was part of something larger and far more disturbing. And it would have been disturbing even to loyal Republicans if they had bothered to understand it. The goal was to make the American presidency more opaque so that no one could see in. The opaque presidency. Take it away from the American public. What right does anyone have? The public, the press, the Congress, the courts, to interfere. Now, I don't care how you describe that. That, truth seeker, is fascism.
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around with.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Went past the hour. All right. In light of that, Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame wrote something at Huffington Post yesterday. And I think you need to hear it. First, they quote Bush's father, George Herbert Walker Bush, at the CIA dedication ceremony, April 26, 1999. I believe this is when they named one of the buildings after him. Pappy Bush said, quote, I have nothing but contempt and anger for those who betray the trust by exposing the name of our sources. They are, in my view, the most insidious of traitors. End quote. Like your son, huh? So here's what the Wilsons wrote. When Bush administration officials I. Scooter Libby, Karl Rove, Richard Armitage, and Ari Fleischer betrayed Valerie Plame Wilson's identity, as a covert CIA operations officer, they fell into the category of, quote, the most insidious of traitors, end quote. Now we learn from the president's former press secretary, Scott McClellan, that the president himself, quote, was involved, end quote, in sending him out to lie to the American public about the betrayal. If his direction to McClellan was deliberate and knowing, then the president was party to a conspiracy by senior administration officials to defraud the public. If that isn't a high crime and misdemeanor, then we don't know what is. And if the president was merely an unwitting accomplice, then who lied to him? What is he doing to punish the person who misled the president to abuse his office? And why is that person still working in the executive branch? Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald made clear his suspicions about the culprit when he said, quote, a cloud remains over the office of the vice president, end quote. but we may never know exactly what happened because President Bush thwarted justice and guaranteed the success of the cover-up when he commuted Scooter Libby's felony sentence on 4 counts of lying, perjury, and obstruction. With the exception of MSNBC's Keith Olbermann, Chris Matthews, and the intrepid David Schuster, the mainstream media would have you believe that McClellan's revelation is old news. Now back to Aruba and the two-year-old disappearance of a blonde teenager. But treason is not old news. The Washington Press Corps, whose pretension is to report and interpret events objectively, has been compromised in this matter, as evidence presented in the courtroom demonstrated. Prominent journalists acted as witting agents of Rove, Libby, and Armitage, and cover up the serious breach of U.S. national security rather than doing their duty as journalists to report it to the public. So far, there is no apparent desire for redemption driving the press to report on the treachery of senior officials. Instead, the mainstream press has compounded its complicity by giving the Bush administration yet another free pass and shifting blame. The New York Times failed to publish an article on McClellan's revelation, and the Washington Post buried it at the end of a column on page A15. Earlier in the week, Newsweek magazine, owned by the Washington Post Company, proudly announced the identity of its new star columnist, Karl Rove, one of the key actors in this collective treason. Robert Novak, who willfully disclosed Valerie's identity, having been twice warned not to do so by the CIA, and who transmitted his column to Rove before it was published, remains a weekly featured columnist in the Washington Post. With nearly 70% of the public now believing that our country is on the wrong track, it is no wonder that many feel let down by major institutions, including the Washington Press establishment that increasingly resembles the corrupt Soviet propaganda mill. One reporter from a major news organization even asked whether McClellan's statement wasn't just, quote, another Joe Wilson publicity stunt, end quote. Try following this tortuous logic. Dick Cheney runs an operation involving senior White House officials designed to betray the identity of a covert CIA officer, and the press responds by trying to prove that the Wilsons are publicity seekers? Whatever happened to reporting the news? Welcome to Through the Looking Glass. Fearful of its access to the powerful and defensive about its status in the high school social culture that permeates the capital of the free world, much of the press has forgotten its responsibility to the public and the Constitution. Today, Republican presidential candidate Fred Thompson has tried to build his support through fronting for the Scooter Libby defense fundraising efforts. Meanwhile, other Republican candidates accuse Patrick Fitzgerald of being, quote, a runaway prosecutor, end quote, and remain silent about the stain on Bush's presidency. Where is the outrage? Where is the contempt and anger? It must be, that's the piece written by Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame Wilson. It's incredible. I honestly believed, you know, I really did. I honestly believed that there would be some sort of noise other than when the bomb dropped. But that's just me. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
I'd like to know who leaked. If anybody's got any information, they ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker.
Unbelievable. All right, we're going to do some emails here from some of the folks tuning in tonight. And then telephone calls from the people who really make this show worth a damn. That would be you all. You know the number here, don't you? 800-989-1480. This is from Ingrid, excuse me, here in Atlanta. Mike and Kathy, I witnessed the police and military harassment at the Fort Benning Gate. She's referring to the School of the Americas demonstration. I was with a 50-ish Dominican nun who had to relinquish her very small cross because the wood was too thick. During the speeches by Dennis Kucinich, Cynthia McKinney, Father Roy, and others, the helicopter hovered overhead, or the military loudspeaker blared, all in an effort to drown out the speaker. This event is attended by the most peaceful people you'd find anywhere. The police and military need to flaunt their power, and that disgusts me. Ingrid in Atlanta. Yeah, that's an old trick that they use constantly on those giving speeches at this demonstration against the School of the Americas. Just put a helicopter overhead. Yeah, got to keep track of those peacenecks, all those Catholic nuns and middle-aged peace lovers and those carrying crosses. William in Hollywood writes, I wonder what would happen, Mike. Let's say two contribution jars were set out in stores outside or on the counter. One said, donate to feed the hungry. One said, donate to feed the war machine. Based on 70% of the people wanting out of Iraq, I wonder which jar would be filled first. After all, it is not the same thing when our tax money is spent against our wishes, isn't it the same thing? Of course, on Black Friday, these jars would have been smashed in the stampede. Speaking of that, Philip in Scranton, PA writes, good evening, Mike. Wow, as I turned MSNBC on early this morning, you could see the hooligans waiting for that $300 laptop at Best Buy. I was a hooligan last year, but it was my first and only time going out into the bracing cold weather. My formula for defeating the Bush crime family is just stop buying other than necessities like groceries. Those HD TVs will be there next year and the year after that and so on and so on. I am so disgusted, Philip writes, with the way Christmas has turned out to be a commercialized fascist holiday. All we are doing is putting ourselves further in debt with a collapsed dollar. My silent revolution is not buying anything from corporations, period. It is time to move underground and get ready for the fourth box. Because with the way bankruptcy laws, thanks to some Democrats, is now, I predict the Dow will be going below 10,000 by spring of 2008. By then, I think martial law would be declared just in time for the 2008 election. Oh, wait a minute. There will be no elections. At least this is what my tinfoil hat says. When the lights go out, will they be ready for us? And I have another question. How will we communicate when the Internet is cut? Well, the Internet is not really, can't really be cut. Or are you just speaking metaphoric? I guess you're just using a metaphor. Yeah. I don't know. Just make sure that you have a lot of water, Philip, and know how to take care of yourself. This is from George. First off, let me thank you for your show. I've been a listener since IE America days. I've heard about Bush on the couch, and I heard Dr. Frank interviewed on both your show and Randy's, and my reaction is, that's disturbing. But how can it be used to control or thwart or modify Bush's dangerous and destructive behavior? Well, since it seems like the root of Bush's problem is his unmourned sister, maybe a mass mailing to the chimp house of condolence cards or flowers about Robin, his dead sister, might get some intervention action going. Even though I have a cold and some mild Thanksgiving food poisoning, I realize that my junior college intro to Psychology 101 doesn't in any way qualify me to decide if this would be effective, destructive, or ignored. Maybe I missed it, but if you get the chance to interview Dr. Frank again, please ask him what action or actions he might recommend for the citizens of the U.S. George. That would be creepy, wouldn't it? If all of a sudden, oh, hell, we can't get a million people to stop buying stuff, much less buying a postcard and mailing it. But wouldn't that, or a sympathy card, a postcard that said, sorry about Robin, wouldn't that be something? Talk about pushing the screaming little monkey over the edge. And then there's this. This is not an email, but this comes from Reuters news agency. The Paris prosecutor's office has dismissed a suit against Donald Rumsfeld, accusing him of torture. Human rights groups who brought the case said on Friday. The plaintiffs, who included the French-based International Federation of Human Rights Leagues and the U.S. Center for Constitutional Rights, said Rumsfeld had authorized interrogation techniques that led to rights abuses. The French organization said it had received a letter from the prosecutor's office ruling that Rumsfeld benefited from something called a customary immunity from prosecution that is granted to heads of state and government and foreign ministers even after they left office. It said in a statement it was, quote, astonished at such a mistaken argument, end quote, and said customary immunity from prosecution did not exist under international law. That's what the French human rights group said. They were astonished at this kind of an argument. And I don't quite understand that either. If these warrants have been dismissed, I guess it's in France. They went after Augusto Pinochet, the dictator that was put in power by Henry Kissinger and Dick Nixon after they arranged the assassination of Salvador Allende in Chile back in 72, 73. And Allende, before that son of a bitch, joined all the undead in hell, had warrants. Matter of fact, he was picked up by the Spanish. Wasn't it the Spanish that picked him up? All right, let's do some phone calls. The number here again, we have three open lines if you want to call in. The number is 800-989-1480. Let's start with Lou in Fort Drum, Florida, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Lou.
Well, happy Turkey Day.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
I wanted to ask you guys, okay, I know Minova M only syndicates you, but, Neil Rogers from Miami, I don't understand why this guy has not been syndicated or put on Sirius or XM, whatever. It's unbelievable. Because if it wasn't for him, I would have never gotten into Randy, and then by proxy, I would have never gotten into you.
Yeah, Neil's been around since God was a teenager.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's because he's content doing what he's doing. I would imagine maybe syndication would have meant he would have had to change shifts or done something different.
I always thought it was because he was such an atheist and stuff. Like that, like anti-religion. Then I heard you, and I thought, wait a minute.
No, it's not that at all. As a matter of fact, he and I both worked for Cox Communications back in the day.
Okay.
I worked for WSB here in Atlanta. He worked for the Cox station in Miami. I've never met him, but we talked on the phone. But no, Neil, I don't know. I guess Neil Rogers just decided he was content doing what he was doing and didn't need to get all funky and crazy with, oh, I'm on 100 stations. You know.
But that's not what I really called about.
All right.
I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, oh God, too many things on my list here. So Mr. Scotty decided to finally drop the beans. All right, let's go with this and say what he said is true.
Uh-huh.
Mrs. Pelosi, hello? Is impeachment still off the table?
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. What's your next one?
Damn. Well, at least I tried.
Yeah.
You know, my 10th grade English teacher, no, it was a government teacher, said, believe what you see. Don't see what you believe. Now, think about that. How many religious people can we apply that to?
None.
Because they do not want to believe what they see. They just want to, oh, I see the Virgin Mary, and it's on.
Okay, what else you got? What else you got, Lou? You're starting to drift. You're starting to drift. What else you got, pal?
All right, I know.
Okay.
I'm bombing here and comedy held.
So go ahead. What else you got?
I planted tomatoes here because I live in the middle of nowhere. I planted them about a week ago.
A week ago?
And they're still growing. They are growing like crazy.
Wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
You planted tomatoes a week ago and they're still growing, and that surprises you?
Well, I mean, Central Florida, you might think, oh, well, palm trees can't get that cold. Wrong. They're about, And when I planted them, they were about 6 inches tall. They're about 3 feet tall now.
Okay. Why are you telling me this?
Because, you know, there's no global warming or anything, right? Of course not.
Okay, what else, Lou?
And you mentioned Saudi Arabia and Libya are the ones that are bringing the
they're the ones providing the most so-called foreign fighters and suicide bombers into Iraq, yes.
But we can't bomb them. They're our allies.
No, they're not our allies.
We have to blow up Iran. Come on.
Okay, but they're not our allies. Those are Bush crime family business partners.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Dang it. Well, I guess I just... Nice try.
Thanks, Lou. Good to hear from you. No, seriously, good to hear from you, Lou. We'll talk again. Next time you talk with Neil Rogers, tell him his old friend Mike Molloy said hello. We'll be back after a moment. Stay with us.
What can I lose if they try?
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Molloy.
10 before the hour. All right, email here from Dr. Sandy in Olympia, Washington, regarding the internet. When I made the kind of offhand comment about, well, you can't just chop the internet, cut it off. Dr. Sandy writes, Mike, as one of the people who made and lost a fortune on the internet, let me tell you just how easy it will be to cripple the internet with a governmental edict. Most of us use major internet providers like AT&T, Comcast, etc. If your cable provider is one of the major players who, for example, have handed over all of their user records to the NSA, there's not much hope of them refusing to turn their subscribers off for reasons of national security. While it's difficult to cripple the internet backbone, the net isn't of much use if nobody can access it through their home or business link to that backbone. When the lights go out, I'm pretty sure the internet will go dark for everybody except those who are using independent internet providers, particularly those who have dial-up connections. We laugh at the slow-speed dial-up modem people right now, but they could eventually be the only people who can talk to each other online. Ooh. Well, and Prairie 2 writes, Mike, not only can the internet be cut, but all internet-based software that can be used to communicate must be submitted to the government in advance, including all encryption keys. Start saving tin cans and string. All righty. Back to your phone calls. Gary is calling from Danville, Kentucky, listening via the internet. Hey, Gary.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going all right.
Well, I called to make a broader point. I called to first talk about the people who got arrested because their cross was too big.
Right.
I am a man of faith. I'm a minister, but I'm not one of these polyester pastors.
Well, good.
And I'm a thinking man of faith, and that's the first thing that I realized going through the seminary is these people are insane.
Yeah, really. Really.
Because fundamentally, the first thing you come to is what you believe, Mike, or what anybody else believes, or what someone in India believes, or what someone with no faith perspective believes, doesn't threaten inherently what I believe.
Right.
But I'm in the minority Christian perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because 99% or more of professing Christians, and our commander-in-chief would be among them,
mm-hmm.
believe in a charred earth campaign of Christianity.
Yeah.
That I will, if you disagree with me, I will kill you until you agree with me.
Right, exactly.
And to tie that into the other story, My brother is a graduate of the School of the Americas. He was in Panama for 3 years before Just Cause.
Hmm.
And here's an interesting footnote. All of the soldiers that were stationed in Panama before the lights went out in Panama had been through the School of the Americas.
Now, you're talking about North American soldiers, or are you talking about Panamanian soldiers?
All of the soldiers that were stationed on our bases in Panama City prior to the insurrection there.
Mm-hmm.
And the pictures I was sent and the letters that I have and the things that I know would make your hair stand on end.
Mm-hmm, I'm
because
sure.
Because people forget that there was a media blackout for weeks before we were spoon-fed a story of, we lost a SEAL team and there was an insurrection and Noriega hit at the Vatican.
Right.
You know, at their Vatican consulate.
Mm-hmm.
But we killed our guys, our hired killers, my brother being amongst them, our soldiers who were trained to go in, burn down houses, kill women and children, torture. I mean, this is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
They drove people into the jungle, and they did horrific and terrible things to people.
It's my understanding that as many as 8,000 Panamanians were killed in this operation. I think that
Operation Just Cause.
Yeah, I think the official total was something like 800 or 900 collateral damage. Poor Panamanians who got in the way of our fighters and our military as we went after George Herbert Walker Bush's former partner, Manuel Noriega. Is that true? Could the death count have been as high as 8,000-9,000 Panamanians?
I don't think it was that low. From
really?
I was told from direct.
Oh my God!
My brother is an alcoholic, and he has severe post-traumatic stress disorder, and he has been both inpatient and outpatient treatment through the VA and elsewhere.
I'm sorry
and
to hear that.
He said no one will ever know the carnage that was wreaked down there. And I said, that was a proofing ground. And looking back, I said, that, and he's even said it, because he's very anti-war now.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that was a proofing ground in the jungle for what you're seeing now in the desert.
Well, I had heard from various sources over the years that that invasion, the common folk like me will never know the truth, like what you just said. We'll never know the truth of what they were trying to cover up. The reason they had to grab Noriega, it's my understanding, he was about to go public with his link to the Bush family and the Panama being a transshipment point for drugs coming out of Colombia.
Yeah,
the money for which was being used to finance the Contra terrorist organization in Nicaragua and all the atrocities we were committing there. And apparently Noriega had just had enough. And I heard the other day, a couple of weeks ago, he was about to be released from Miami Detention Center, but all of a sudden Spain has a hold on him.
Right.
So now he's going to go to Spain. This poor bastard will never, ever, ever be free, I'm sure.
The safest place he can be is in prison, because he'll die in a one-car accident on a lonely road.
Yeah, yeah. Brakes will fail.
We will never, they're not going to get their meat hooks out of him,
because
that's exactly what he was going to turn over on America. And we swooped down on it. Our government swooped down. And people forget Negroponte was up to his neck in that.
Oh, absolutely.
And we have amnesia in this country. We forget that's what was going on. And
well, that's the role of television, is to make
us
make us forget all of this stuff. Hey, listen, Gary, we got a break here. I'm glad you called in. I hope to hear from you again. All right.
All right.
All right, sir. Thanks. Take care. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. This is the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy.
like a drunk in a midnight choir.
Did I do that?
I have tried.
Squeak!
In my way.
Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. My name is Mike Malloy. Final hour of the program tonight. If you'd like to join in, the number is 800-989-1480. Sandra is calling from Sacramento, listening on the internet. Hey, Sandra.
Hey. Listen, I'm so glad that you're live. I didn't think you'd be back this week.
Oh, I'm not. This is a recorded program.
Well, listen, I'm just calling because, you know, the Supreme Court is going to hear this case about handguns in D.C. First of all,
yeah.
I mean, those people don't get to vote. They don't have guns. I mean, it's like some sort of netherworld there. But what I'm wondering is everyone's all sort of wondering, you know, what they're going to do. But I'm kind of concerned because, well, isn't that, couldn't they just use that to, like, strip people of guns?
Well, they could, but, you know, this is supposed to be a states' rights issue, and Washington, D.C., obviously, is not a state. I don't know. This is what it says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state.
Right. Well, no, I understand that, and it also, you know, it sounds somewhat benign, but just in
No. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm questioning is how the Supreme Court is going to rule on a case, which is Washington D.C. The city council there passed an ordinance years ago, saying that nobody could own handguns. I believe that's how it works, and somebody has challenged that. Washington D.C. is administered by the U.S. Congress. It is not a state.
So
it's a setup. I think what's going to happen is the Supreme Court is going to rule that there are no restrictions on owning weapons in this particular case because it's not a state. It's not a political entity that has any of the rights of the 50 states. And when they rule that way, then the gun crazies in this country are going to say, "See, we told you." And everybody's going to run out. All these people are going to run out and start buying military assault weapons and bazookas and boxes of hand grenades. And I'll probably be in that line for damn sure.
Well, no, that's what I'm just wondering because the way that court is made up, yeah, I'm assuming that they're going to use it as a way to, you know, expand, quote, people's access to.
Probably so, Sandra. But the whole issue to me is just bogus because, I mean, if they were doing this, if somebody in the state of Ohio or the state of Florida or the state of Wyoming was the interested party in this suit, who would challenge some state ordinance or some city ordinance in a state that was really a state and the Supreme Court agreed to hear it, then it would make a little more sense than doing it in Washington, D.C.
So it's just a throwaway case for them to sort of do more.
Sounds like it to me.
Yeah, okay, because I don't know. Every time I hear anything about these courts visiting cases that haven't been touched for decades, I just think, oh, mm-hmm. God, you know, what are they going to do now?
Well, on the other hand, Sandra, I don't know. What, you know, I'm just guessing. These people are capable of anything.
No, exactly. No, I used to be like you, not sort of dismissing these people who said there's going to be no election, but I've rapidly moved into the, oh my God, you know,
what's
going to happen November 8th or whenever the next day is, because I'm really starting to wonder. So when I called about the guns, because see, I'm in the process of moving into that realm too. I've never had one, but I'm seriously thinking about addressing that concern. So anyway, it's just, I don't know. I'm kind of, you know, they got the passport together, everything, because I'm sort of really kind of starting to freak out because I think Giuliani's going to slip in there somehow. Sorry, I'm really.
Well, if that happens, save me a seat and one for my wife and my kid. Because we'll be on the same flight, sweetheart.
Okay, well, listen, take care.
Thank you, Sandra.
Bye.
You too. Take care. Yeah. Good God. Yeah, I'm only guessing on the Supreme Court case that is to be heard, I guess, in December or January, and then a ruling will be issued by this fascist court in April. And again, it depends on how the word state in the Second Amendment is defined, I guess. But, you know, why this particular case coming to the attention? Why not a case from Chicago? In Chicago, you're not allowed to own a gun. I'm sure there are other municipalities that exist inside of a political entity called a state. And Washington, D.C. is not a state. It is a district. And it is run by, right, the Congress. Oh, they have their police, but I mean all their funding, and whoever controls the purse strings controls what sorts of decisions are made. So a mayor of D.C. or Eleanor Holmes, who has been the non-voting representative of D.C. forever, the city council, they have no real power. They can, I guess they can pass ordinances, which is what has happened here, or not this particular city council or mayor. I mean, this ordinance has been in effect for a number of years. I think, 20, 30 years? It's been in effect for a long time. I think that's the situation. So the whole case sounds bogus. You want to challenge the right of the people to own guns, then do it where there are clear definitions of state, of militia, in order to maintain a free, you know, all that. Do it where it's very clear. D.C., Washington, D.C. is... It's a place where government officials get together and do their business. It is not a state. Oh, well, you know, I'm repeating myself. It's a creepy case. George is calling from Denver, also listening on the Internet. Do we have any radio? Hey, George.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for reading 1984 to me.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
I have two things.
Okay.
McClellan, Powell, Rice, Ford, they all do that. They cover themselves. They do their dirty little deed, and then they pretend like they didn't know what they were getting into.
Well, this guy, McClellan, I think he's really putting himself out there for a possible brain aneurysm, or he may commit suicide by shooting himself three times in the back of the head. I mean, this is pretty serious stuff that he's alleging. Now, the fact that corporate America is totally ignoring it. The only stories you've heard for the past two or three days have been about, come on, shoppers! Come on! By God, break out your credit cards! Let's go! It's Black Friday! Bye, 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 you suckers! That's all we've been hearing. So, I don't know if McClellan feels like he is safe, because nobody's talking about it, or if he feels like he's a dead man walking because he dumped on the five, if these were Nazis, if Bush and Cheney and Rove and Libby and Abrams and the rest of these people, if they were Nazis, they would have been Hitler and Goebbels and Himmler and Hess, that whole inner circle of Nazis. And McClellan just came out and accuses them of high crimes and misdemeanors that should be impeachable first and then punishable in criminal court second, and then third, their asses hauled before a military or some sort of tribunal for crimes against humanity. So if I were Scott McClellan right now, I don't know. I think I would throw acid in my face and remove my fingernails. I mean, my fingerprints, so nobody would ever recognize me, and I'd go hide.
And my other thing, I saw this video last week, and it's so good, and I'd just like to get it out to the masses. And it's called Evidence of Revision.
Evidence of Revision.
Yeah, you can Google that. And when you get to part four, Google kind of hid that somewhere. So what you have to do is go to Google, go to video, and then put Evidence of Revision, and in parentheses put 4 of 5, and then you'll get it. But it's these people did a beautiful job on this thing.
And what's it about?
It's about JFK and LBJ and
oh, really?
CIA. It's about Jonestown massacre.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the whole thing and how the CIA is tied into it all. And you know, McClellan's dad wrote a book.
Yeah.
Where I think he blamed LBJ, didn't he?
I don't know. The McClellan family in Texas is another one of those weird Texas families, like Karen Hughes and Karl Rove. So many of those people down there on the right, the conservatives or the Republicans, I don't know. It's like they all have worms or something. There's something crawling around inside their circulatory systems of their brains that are just bad, you know, bad for them. George, I have to leave you there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
All right, they're almost gone, Kathy. Snyder's of Hanover. Pretzels. Oh, man. I don't think I've ever eaten this many pretzels. See, that shows the devotion that exists in this marriage. Kathy had that bag of pretzels out there in the control section, and during one of the breaks about an hour and a half ago, she said, please, you've got to take these away from me. So I took them, and I've been eating them. I'm a good husband.
What, will you go upstairs and start on the rest of the pie now?
23 past the hour.
Eliminate that from my vision.
No, I can't do pie. We had a great time with friends and family. We really did for Thanksgiving. And we just kind of isolate ourselves out here, don't we? And we played Scattergories and the memory game that Molly likes and her grandma and her big brother and sister-in-law were here, and then everybody else were friends. Had some rain. It rained Thanksgiving morning.
Sonny Perdue must have been praying extra hard.
He was praying. I wish he would pray to have God strike down all the developers that caused this problem to begin with. But all right, back to your phone calls. Jeremiah is calling from Oceanside, California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jeremiah.
Hey, Mike. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm a big fan, first of all.
Thank you.
And I've got a chance to listen to you a few times, but I just wanted to get your view on, you know, which candidate do you think would actually go ahead and end this occupation over in Iraq and elsewhere, and what you thought about the best candidate would be?
Well, apparently Ron Paul on the Republican side would end it. Dennis Kucinich on the Democratic side would end it. They have both been unequivocal in stating that, you know, you make me president and this gig is over. I think Mike Gravel on the Democratic side has said essentially the same thing. Now, you'll notice the three candidates I mentioned. These are all three that because we live in the kind of world we live in, have not a chance to win. And I don't want to piss off the Ron Paul fans out there or supporters, because I know Ron Paul has gotten a lot of press lately about how his backers have really, you know, generated money for him so he can continue his race and so on and so forth. And that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, I think it's either going to be Hillary Clinton, Maybe John Edwards. I hope with all my heart that it is not Giuliani. If it is Giuliani, I think there's a lot of Americans who are going to say, okay, that's it, I'm out of here, because George Bush is one thing. Giuliani is an absolute Nazi. You know, Giuliani believes in the bullet theory, and that is, you know, if people are suspected of a crime, shoot them down in the streets or in the hallways of their own apartments, shoot them with 41 shots, or if you have an out-of-control police department that takes someone into the precinct house and rapes them with broomsticks and causes them all kinds of internal damage, support the cops. Don't support the immigrant who got that. Giuliani is a Nazi beyond anything Bush would ever aspire to. So I don't know who it's going to be, Jeremiah. I just hope to hell that it's not Giuliani. And to a lesser extent, I hope it's not Hillary Clinton. But I'll take Hillary anytime.
Yeah, that's my question. I've been kind of confused lately. I understand the first three guys that you mentioned, Yustinich, Paul, and Gravel, are the only three to vote against the war in the first place. And I know Hillary hasn't even stated that she wanted to withdraw the troops because she still thinks that, you know, the terrorist threat's too high or whatever, you know, quote-unquote terrorist threat. And that's what I was kind of confused, because I'm a big fan of Paul because he has vowed to withdraw the troops. And I heard you actually, you know, pretty much bashing him the other day. Now, what do you think would be bad, the worst thing that would happen with Ron Paul as president?
Well, to make it very quick here, Ron Paul is a libertarian. He ran from Texas as a Republican, but Ron Paul's a libertarian. Back in '88, I believe he was the libertarian presidential candidate. And libertarians, not only do they not believe in foreign wars, but they don't believe too much in anything regarding government responsibility or obligation or involvement. Everything from guaranteeing bank accounts to whatever it is, libertarians are against it. I hope that explains it. Thanks, Jeremiah.
Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. John Neames is calling from Las Vegas. John Neames, the musician. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. It's great to talk to you, man.
My pleasure.
The reason I called in was because the gentleman who was calling at the top of the hour about Panama, and I think that is so important to never forget Panama.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a trivia question. What does the year 1959 mean, other than the White Sox were in the World Series that year?
Castro?
No, Saddam Hussein and Manuel Noriega both became CIA operatives that same year.
Oh, okay.
And I don't forget dates. Mm-hmm. I know I've read that a couple of times in of the many books I've read. I don't know where, but once I you know, see a year like 1959 as a kid in Chicago, I don't forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people should remember how long that Saddam Hussein and Manuel Noriega have been working for our government. And it's amazing to me how so few people know these things.
Well, it's also amazing that we can put one of them in prison until he dies. That would be Noriega, because that's where he will die. And the other one, we can make it appear that he is being legally executed by his countrymen.
Right.
And it's amazing. And the American public sits back on its collective ass and goes, well, Yeah. Well, he was. You know, he sent the bombers over to the trade towers. I mean,
right.
We're so stupid in this country. Well, I can't stand it, John.
And it's dead men don't tell tales. Is you know why? Something like Oswald had to die. Lee Harvey Oswald, Timothy McVeigh. Certain people at the line. By the way, two nights ago I was channel surfing before I went to bed, and there on Charlie Rose's show. I will never watch a show again. He had Karl Rove on, and they're talking like bosom buddies.
Yeah.
And Karl Rove was talking about how the Constitution meant so much to him. And I was like, I was like, what? He's everywhere, this guy. He should be one place, in jail, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's
and then I saw Dennis Miller criticizing the movie Lions to Lambs, saying they're anti-troops. Dennis, no, it's thinking. It's a thinking process. As like Overman calls him, the former comedian. This guy is such a hack right now. He's in bed with Fox News. And Dennis Miller, you know, every time I see him, he's as bad as all of them.
Well, Miller, you know, after failure after failure after failure, the only success he ever had was at Saturday Night Live. And just failure compounded by failure, he has now reached the nadir of his career, which is in the sewer at Fox Fox News, being some kind of a butt boy for a Billow.
Right.
And it's on the one hand, it's kind of a shame to see, because while I always thought Dennis Miller was awful wordy for a comedian.
Right, he was.
He would just go on and on and on. You know, that guy never met a compound sentence he didn't want to sleep with. But he would just go on and on and on and on. He still was kind of funny, but something happened to Miller. I don't know.
Well,
he took the blue pill.
They got to him. That's what happened.
I guess that's it. If you want to keep working, you're a failure, you're a washout, we'll keep you going. If you want to switch sides, he's kind of like what's his name, David Horowitz, who you know, one of the founders of was it The Realist or Ramparts? I guess it was Realist.
Right.
And now he's nothing but a pig fascist for the right wing. So you know, these guys crack me up. I don't know how they can look in the mirror in the morning.
Yeah, and you read my email about how I believe Rudy was in on 9/11. I'd sent that to you a while back.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things to me that implicate him. And also, thanks for playing Innocent People.
Sure.
I think you should designate one night a week to talk about all the crimes of the Bush family, Prescott Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush. Every night, just spend like a half hour doing it. At least maybe some right winger will hear it. And by the way, every day some right winger gives me the finger, and that makes me feel so good. Because of my bumper stickers.
Right.
But go see Lions to Lambs. It makes you think, people. It's not against the truth.
You know, we want to see that. We want to see Beowulf. There's several of them we want to see. John, can you hop on the next flight over here and come over and babysit for us? We can't get a babysitter.
Hey, I'll come and I'll bring my guitar and I'll teach Molly Innocent People.
That sounds like a winner.
And thanks again and happy Thanksgiving to all the chatters out there and everybody. And I got a new song started on Monday. It's called Confrontation.
Well, send it to me. We'll play it.
I'll be sending you all of them, man.
All right. Thanks, John.
Take care, Mike.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care, too. John Neames, musician. When he first started calling the program, way back, was that in the IE America days, or was it IE America? Or Air America, one of the two. He said he was a piano tuner. And he is. I mean, you know, you don't be a musician or an actor or a writer without having a day job. And in some instances, you don't do talk radio without having a day job, too. Ah! Robin is calling from Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Hey, Robin.
Hi, good evening, Mike. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Well, I'm depressed, really depressed. The other day, I was over at my neighbor's, and I was visiting with him. And my neighbor has a little son. He's not even 2 years old yet. And, you know, I am so sick of what's going on in our country, and I see this little boy, and it tore me up. It really tore me up to think that we have these people who call themselves leaders, and they don't know where they're taking this world, man.
Yeah.
They don't know where they're taking this world. These poor, innocent children, I'm so sick of this. I listen to you almost every night, and I can't see how you maintain your sanity, brother.
Well, I do a lot of illegal drugs, and no.
God.
No, I don't. You know, I just I've got a 3-year-old, and a 3-year-old is like a legal drug. I mean, I can't. She's a real diversion. Trust me. And that it keeps me other focused, more or less.
Yeah, you know, I wish there was some way. You know, there was one who once said, "Be ye as wise as serpents and yet as gentle as doves." And you know, I just keep wondering, what is the way to at least buy us a little more time? You know, yeah. I don't believe that this country is going to last forever, but at least a little more time. How could we educate, maybe, you know, reach out and touch the young people who are going into the military, you know? I mean, there's got to be an answer, brother. There's got to be.
Well, you know, it's education. Educating young people that the current military setup of the United States government under Bush, anyone who joins the military is not joining to serve his or her nation. That young person is joining to serve the insanity of George Bush or Dick Cheney or the corporatists who now run this country. And I think if kids understood that, that the gung-ho, you know, I see the ads, they appeal to kids on the basis of duty, honor, country. Those are just so out of date. Duty, honor, country, my ass.
Yeah.
Somebody joins the military now, what duty? The duty to go kill people for oil. Honor. The honor that comes with going to kill people for oil. Country. What country? The country that has now been disabled by this Bush crime family. And the country now is to go kill people for oil. For the corporations that run the country. I mean, it's insane. And
you know what also is just equally insane is that does it seem that there's this reluctance on people's parts to say, you know, I heard you earlier saying that these people should be not only tried, convicted, and sentenced, but I would go one step further. I would like to see this man go to the place that's reserved for him in hell next to Hitler, in the cell right next to him, because that's where he needs to be.
Well, there's a lot of people in government, this one in particular, that probably one could say the same thing. Thanks, Robin. Take care, man. I appreciate what you had to say. Charles is calling from Connecticut, listening via the Internet. Hey, Charles.
Hello.
Hi.
Wish you a happy birth illegal immigrant day.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Thanks to Sam Theater for that.
Yeah. First Illegal Immigrants Day.
Yeah. Yeah. I had this theme that, Simple Scotty's book.
Yeah.
Is like, you know, you watch a movie and the commercial seems really good, but you have a suspicion that out of those 30 seconds, that those are the only funny scenes.
Yeah, right.
And you foolishly put down the however much money down is, and you sit there, and 90 minutes later, you prove, gosh, the commercial really was so much better.
So you think that McClellan's book may be that way? A couple of bombs like that, a couple of stink bombs, and the rest of it is just going to be his usual gibberish.
Yeah, that may be all that there is, because based on that and, you know, seeing how Hillary, the typical Republican that she really is.
Yeah. Well, I hear you, Charles. You just may be right. Hey, listen, thanks, pal. I got a boogie. Thanks for checking in. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom for trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our very laid-back crew. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, and, of course, our executive producer, Catherine Bay. God, I just want to smoke cigarettes and drink. But I don't do the former and the latter, not very much. I love that music. Mary is calling from Memphis, Tennessee, listening via the internet. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Mike. I've not been able to listen for a little while, and I'm wondering if during your past shows you got to the gunpoint medicine in Prince George County, Maryland.
No, I haven't. I saw that story, and I've got real mixed emotions about that, Mary. You know, I've had a number of children and grandchildren, and they've all gotten their vaccinations against childhood diseases. We all went through the possibility that thimerosal might be in something. I insisted with Molly, with her pediatrician, that not be the case, yada, yada. And I come from that generation that, you know, I can remember when I had classmates who would disappear from school and I found out they had polio or rheumatic fever or whatever. And so I happen to be a believer in vaccinations, in preventive medicine, and
yeah, that there are certain good things about that.
And people
who got those had informed consent and voluntarily wanted these vaccinations.
That's true,
and that's not the case in Prince George County, where health freedom advocates and mothers with kids that got autism from vaccinations were forced away by armed strangers in uniforms with attack dogs.
Well, it's a
told
shame
that they could not inform people about autism or waivers or anything else like that. And so far as I know, this is the only quote civilized unquote country that has to administer medicine at gunpoint.
Well, it is. It's awful, and I agree with that. I didn't pay too much attention to the case or the situation, the story, because I thought it would just be one more thing that would start shredding my my ability to think straightly. I wondered when I saw the story and just scanned it. I wonder if these were parents who were truly opposed to having stuff pumped into their kids, or if they were parents who were just being irresponsible about. You know, I'm sure you're aware of that. It's called, I forget what it's called, a herd effect. If you have 10,000 people and 6,000 of them are vaccinated against a certain disease, herd protection, vaccinated against a certain disease, that usually means that the other 4,000 who weren't vaccinated probably won't get it because it's...
Exactly. That's been said so by various positions of innovation.
It can't get into the herd, so to speak. So I've got, like I say, I've got mixed emotions. If I were told I had to do something like vaccinate my child, I would probably say, says who? And if I wanted information, and I've got all the information I could get on the possible link between autism and a mercury preservative, and if somebody wanted to give me information and they were prevented by some court order or some cop, I would go out of my mind. So I hate it, Mary, that now we have this has been turned into this kind of an issue.
Right. And the state attorney there, whose name momentarily escapes me, ordered that people should do this, but he refused the vaccination for his own child, mm-hmm. whereas it was okay for people from a lower economic class to have it for their children.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, he had the money and so forth to be educated and get alternatives. And a lot of these other people did not. And it's not entirely their own fault that they're ignorant. So, anyway, I just wanted to gripe about that a little bit.
Well,
I think I'll go make Molly's Fort and watch old reruns of The Beach Monster annoys Sandra Dee.
It's an awful issue, Mary. Sometimes I just wonder when the hell it's going to stop. It's an awful issue. Thanks for checking in, dear.
All right.
Take care. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that issue. I really don't. I've had friends who were just adamantly opposed to any sort of vaccination. I've had other people who believed in naturopathic medicine or holistic medicine who have tried to explain to me, look, all you're doing with the vaccination is introducing a minute amount of, or even now, it's just part of the DNA, or what is it, Kathy, an encasing around a molecule. You're not getting live viruses, especially flu vaccine, a protein coat or whatever, so that your immune system can identify it. And a lot of people have said to me that is a classic example of what's the kind of medicine, not allopathic medicine, but the other kind, homeopathic, thank you. That it's classic homeopathic medicine, that you treat or prevent with a teeny tiny amount. So, you know, I got a flu shot this year, and I also got a pneumovax, a pneumonia shot, because I'm at that age. And I'll tell you something, that pneumonia shot hurt like 10 hells. Boy, that sucker. But I believe in the truth of vaccination preventing disease. I just wish it were not the way it's supposed to, you know, the way it's evolved. Where's Straight to Hell? Can you find Straight to Hell? We got to have that. There he is. Anyway, I hear you, Mary, loud and clear.
I forgot it was Friday.
I know. It feels like Tuesday afternoon, doesn't it? Thanks for hanging out with me tonight. I'll see you Monday, all right? Take care, y'all. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.